Nanakya Trapatika Parabrahma Tattvam Yuvanam Varshishtam Te Vasadvrishikanayaravritam Brahmanishtai Acharyendram Karakalita Chimudramanandamurtim Swatmaramam Muditavadanam Dakshinamurtimidehi Vishwandaripanadrishyamananagarituliyam nijantaragatam Pashyannatmani mayaya bahirivod bhutam yatha nidraya Yasakshat kurute prabodhasamaye swatmanamevadvayam Tasmai Shri Guru Murtaye Nama Idam Shri Dakshina Murtaye.
Do you know this one?
Mijasyantari Vankuro Jagavidam Pranir Vikalpam Punaha Maya Kalpita Desha Kala Kalana Vaichitri Chitri Kritam Mayadiva vijum payatyapi maha yogiva yasvechaya Tasmai Shri Guru Murtaye Nama Idam Shri Dakshina Murtaye.
So, continuing on with verse 2, Maya. So I was saying that we have our own experience of Maya, especially dream is one of the best examples of our little piece of Maya. Imagination, that we have an imagination, is magical. We're Mayavis in terms of our imagination. We can create a world just like that, project a world and have all of the components in the world that we project. There is space, air, fire, water, earth, all of the five elements and elementals, right? And there's also activity, which we call rajas, the power of motion and action and activity. There is the reflection of consciousness in all of the beings that are enjoying known, being a knower and being known. There's the whole creation itself, which reflects consciousness, as the whole dream is known to you. And there are also physical objects that I can differentiate from subtle objects, like my mind, my thoughts and my feelings are what we call subtle or paribhasika. Paribhasika means they're subjective. I can have subjective experiences, and then there are objective experiences. So I would say, just in my experience in this waking state, but it's true in the dream, it's true in all states really, that there is a differentiation between a thought or an imagination and the world that I perceive. So with an imagination, for instance, or any thought, I can change it. I can change my mind. I can change the way I feel about something. I can imagine a pot, destroy it, and imagine a tree, just like that. So it's not the objects and experiences we have that are subjective, not shared, right? Have, in a sense, a different order of reality than the experiences that are shared, like us in this room. We can't just click our fingers and turn it into something else. So this room and all of us and this universe that we experience through our sense organs is not our creation from the standpoint of myself as an individual. In fact, I am part of this creation. This body, mind, sense organs is part of this creation. Whereas in my subjective reality, I am the creator. It's like I am the Ishwara of my imagination. Right? If I ask you to imagine something, that imagination, you are the Karta, you are the one who is doing that imagination. And also the whole imagination exists in you, is sustained by you, is known because of your being. See what I mean? But nobody else knows it. You can also do whatever you want with it, right? Because you're the Ishwara of that imagination. So that's subjective. So now, if we're talking about Maya, which I'm just pointing out to you a little few examples of your little piece of Maya, like for instance the the dream and the imagination and projection. Projections are also, you know, little creation, snake on the rope. That maya, ya ma iti maya, that which has no being of its own, just think about it for that. It's asat karta, it's a sat. Asat means it itself has no sat. Sat means existence or being. It has no sat because you can project it and withdraw it and change it, you know. If you decide for it not to be there, poof, it's not there. Right? So that has no independent being, right? So from the standpoint of you in your subjective world, that the asat nature of that projection, of that dream projection, I think is pretty clear, right? It means that you can decide to wake up from the dream, but the dream says no, you know, as though it has a choice, you know. Or you imagine a meadow, and then you say, okay, no. It has a choice. It has no choice. It doesn't have its own stanam. It doesn't have its own being to, once created, remain there. That's not true. If you create something here in this reality, then you can't just undo it like that, you know, because it's substantial. If you build a table, then you have to, some of us who don't know carpentry very well, you know, when we try to build a table, right? The legs aren't even. It takes a lot of work, but nevertheless, I can't just go, shh, legs, become even, please, you know? It's not like that. We're dealing with material that is not our subjective projection, right? So, when we're talking about maya as being its very nature, being mithya, this word mithya, and Vedanta mithya is so important. Mithya means that the maya has no independent being of its own. It is borrowing that being. Just like the snake is borrowing the being of the rope is its adhishtana. This creation, as we analyze it, even in this physical creation that we as subjective, we don't have any subjective control over this creation, but if we analyze it, we'll find that it itself has no being, just like the dream has no being of its own. And so once we, as we discover that this creation that we experience that is called maya has no independent being, then it deserves the title of mithya. That's what mithya means. It has no independent reality of its own. You can't use in any real way the term mithya without having discovered the adhishtana, without having recognized the adhishtana. It has no meaning. For instance, I can't say to you that the pot is mithya unless you have recognized the relationship of the pot to the clay. Or maybe better yet, that say, oh, the snake, that's only mithya. What does that mean? It's not mithya for me until I see the rope. Once the rope is known, then the nature of the snake as mithya becomes very clear. But until then, my experience of the snake is real in my mind. It's still mithya, but I can't use that word. It's not mithya to me. And so like that, I can't dismiss maya as mithya. If I say maya is that that mithya, that material which is responsible for the manifestation of this creation, for the manifestation of all duality. And that maya itself is mithya because it has, for it, it depends on the its adhishtana, it depends on an adhishtana for its being. And the adhishtana it depends upon is myself, is conscious being. And the example then that we can bring in to make you understand that is for you just as a subjective, as an individual, when you have an imagination, or if you have a dream, that dream totally depends upon you for its being. It has no substance of its own. It's not really a creation, right? Who's created it? It's not a creation. Nobody's built it. It's a manifestation of knowledge. Right? Just think of it like this. Even in your dream or your imagination, or even a projection of a snake on a rope, it's a manifestation of your knowledge. And that manifestation of knowledge means that that knowledge, just like any thought that you have, that knowledge is known and it enjoys your being. Right? Any thought, it is known and it enjoys your being, right? Because the thought is, every object in the thought is, and the thought is known, and every object in the thought is known. But the isness that the thought enjoys doesn't belong to the thought, because the thought goes away, right? And the being remains. The thought comes into being and goes out of being, right? It is born and it dies. That's the condition of the universe. Everything in the universe comes into being and it goes out of being. That's the nature of change. Change means something comes into being and goes out of being. That means every single experience that you have, just by that fact alone, is mithya. Just by that fact alone. Because if something actually comes into being, what was it before? Where was it? It came into being, where was it before? And it goes out of being, then where is it gone? It means it's bordered by non-existence. So think of it like this. If you have a lump of clay and you make that lump of clay into a pot, the pot has come into being, right? And when you squash it down into a plate, the pot has gone out, lost its being, right? And so the pot really has no being of its own. If it has no being at the beginning and no being at the end, how can it have being in the middle? It doesn't. But it depends on what does have being, and that's the clay. In terms of this illustration, right, the clay is the reality there. So the clay doesn't come in and out of being. That's what's actually there in reference to the pot. So the clay would be the satyam, the adhishtana, of the mithya pot, because the pot doesn't have any existence apart from the clay, right? That's the satyam-mithya relationship. It's the same with the rope snake. The snake is mithya, because there is no snake really. There's really only a rope. The snake was projected upon the rope. It has no prior existence, it has no posterior existence, and it doesn't really have any existence in the middle. Other than that, we experience it. We experience it, but the only thing that is there substantially is the rope. So we acknowledge the experience, but upon analysis we find that that whatever it is that we're analyzing, it has no thingness. There is no thing there. And that's why it gets relegated to the category of maya. That which is not, that is maya. It has no being of its own. So the whole maya, we say the whole maya is responsible for this creation. Upon analyzing anything in the creation, we find that all of these nama rupas, names and forms that we experience, like this is a name and form, this is a name and form, your name and form, and everything that we see can be categorized as a name and form. When we analyze this world of name and form, we find that there really is no, there is really no form. There's only a conglomerate of forms. So Swamiji will say, Puja Swamiji will say, that these are only names. Like this is a little couch, a two-seater. This is a couch. Okay? Couch is a nama. It's a name for many different things that have been put together. You know, probably cotton and cloth and wood and, you know, all of the things that are involved, thread, all of the things that are involved in building this conglomerate, you know. make then when put together get a name, couch. But there's really no one thing here. There's a bunch of things put together. And actually, absolutely everything in the creation is like that. Everything, we have names for everything, but we're naming a conglomerate of many things, you know, that are, that when put together are called couch or rug or cloth or whatever. You see what I mean? But where's the real thingness there to say that this is something real, that this has some sort of being of its own? It's just like if we, Swamiji will say, like, if you have a shirt, right? Somebody has a shirt. So an example he uses, a shirt. Really, what is there is the cloth, right? But what is the cloth? Well, the cloth is really made of thread, you know? And so what's really there then is thread. And then what is the thread made out of? You can say, well, it's a cotton shirt, so the thread is made out of strands of cotton. Okay? So then the cotton strands are there, the cotton is there. But then what is the cotton made out of? You know? And then we have to go in with our microscope. And with the cotton, we have, well, cotton is really made of a bunch of different types of molecules, or however you want to go. And that's made of quarks, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. What I'm saying is that everything, without exception, really, that you experience and you give it thingness by giving it a name, upon analysis, you find that there really is no thing there. There's just names upon names within names within names within names within names within names. And where does that end? Where is it going to end? Because we find that everything is a every form is a conglomerate of smaller forms. It's just how it is. This is just when we're trying to look at any vastu to try to find something. So we're having an experience of things, but upon analysis, those things aren't there, right? They're just names for conglomerates of smaller and smaller and smaller and smaller parts. So now imagine this, okay. We're gonna do this analysis of all of these things until we get to the very smallest part. The very smallest one, out of which all of these things are made. They're really in the end just a conglomerate of the smallest, tiniest part. But here's the problem. If that tiniest part that you've come up with, Brahman, or the reality of that tiniest part, is smaller than that. It's smaller than the smallest. And the reason is this. If the tiny part takes up space, if it doesn't take up space, it's not there for you to be able to have any relationship with. So we say the tiniest part, because you're labeling it like I am, a tiny little part, this tiny little part takes up space, right? That means that part has a right side and a left side and a top and a bottom and a middle, right? So what is the substance, the being, which that little part, that little form, enjoys? In order to get to the substance, we have to look inside the form. So let's do like this. Let's take the form off the substance to see what's inside of it. And so you're going to have this problem. Either what's going to be inside of it is smaller forms, and then you have to take the form off of that to get to see the, what is it, the substance, to see what the reality it is. Or you recognize that what is actually the substance of that tiniest form or biggest form has to be free of form. Because if it's not free of form, then you're defining your experience by a form, not by what the form, the stuff of the form. You know, it's like defining the pot by the potness instead of by the clay, which is what is actually there. So get to the very smallest imaginable form and make it a baby clay pot. Here's the pot. You're still defining, you know, the thing that you're experiencing in terms of the form, not in terms of what is actually there. And so for something to actually be there, that thing has to exist. It has to have being, not be mithya. Forms by their nature are mithya because they depend upon something else to be. They depend upon their substance. Any form, think about it. Any form depends upon its content to be. If you remove the content, the form is gone. See that? So, but what that means is that what is actually there, what is actually here, can't have a form. Because the form is mithya, just by definition. The form is mithya because it depends for its being on something else, on the substance. So now get to any size form, it's going to be mithya, and you think that you can get down to the substance by getting down to smaller and smaller forms, that's never going to work. Because the form is still dependent, has a dependent reality on the ultimate substance. So now that's going to mean that the ultimate substance of what is here can't be a form. And if it's not a form, you can't see it. That's a dilemma. If it's not a form, you can't see it. You see that? But this is the saving grace of the whole thing. You, this body, mind, sense organs, you are also a form. And the forms, this form that you are, we call it the body, for instance, will break into smaller and smaller and smaller and smaller forms. And eventually you have to give up this task of breaking forms into smaller and smaller and smaller forms. And you have to recognize now what is the actual substance that is here of all of these forms. What is the actual substance? And that actual substance of my own experience of this form, instead of the experience of the... We can't have the experience really down to the core of this couch, right? The couch has to be able to get down to its core. Okay. But you are the nama rupa, the name and form, and you are the substance. Because here you are. It's just like the pot is the mithya pot, the nama rupa, the name and form, and it's the clay, right? So you're in the same situation. You are the name and form, and you are the substance of the name and form, or you wouldn't exist, right? If I take any form, if I take the substance out of the form's gone. It's not there. It's totally dependent on the substance. So now what about you? We have to discover what is the substance of this person, this body, mind, sense organs that has prana and that has, you know, thoughts and feelings and all of this whole very complex conglomerate that makes me a human being, this complex conglomerate of both subtle and gross materials, stula and sukshma. What is ultimately the being here, the substance here? What is it going to be? Well, first of all, it can't be something that can be objectifiable as a form. The form itself, I've got to take it off, right? Because the form is mithya. So if I label my own experience of being as a form, then I'm like the pot. And that's not good enough. I have to be the clay. So what ultimately makes me, and you? What is it? It's not going to be something that is objectifiable. I cannot be something which is objectifiable. If I'm objectifiable within time and space, I'm a form, right? And so once again, I'm away from what is actually the actual me. The actual thing that makes me me. And so that's why in the whole teaching tradition, the prakriya, one of the major prakriyas we use is what we call drik drisha viveka, that seer seeing analysis. Because what happens in terms of this getting to the satyam, what is real, is we start out by just taking a look at this person here. And what about me can I objectify as a form? what about me exists within time and space and has a form? The instant has a form, it's mitya, so I have to go deeper to find out what is actually the substance of the form. Right? And so, first I start out by objectifying my body. My body is a form. And there's two things to notice here. My body, this physical body, I am a form, and this form is something that I am aware of, that I objectify. So not only do I acknowledge it as a form, but I also acknowledge that this form is known, right? It is a form, and it is a form which is, because I exist, and it is known. You can't say that it's not, right? This form is, I am, that's what I am, and I am known. So this body becomes something objectifiable, you know? Now, in reference to this body, I can say, well, this body, it is and it is known, really only because I have sense organs which are aware of it, right? If I didn't have any sense organs, this body wouldn't even be known. That's another makes it difficult. If my relationship with this body is dependent upon sense perception, then this body that is objectifiable through my sense organs. So not only is it something which I can objectify, it's also something which is easy to negate. For instance, if I'm blind, I can't perceive this body, the form of this body. If I don't have a sense of touch, I can't feel this body. If I don't have a sense of taste, I can't taste this body. If I get rid of all the five sense organs, I have no contact with this body at all. Right? But my perception of something, the mere fact that something is, that I can perceive it, means that I'm not it. Just by that fact, I have a subject-object relationship. It's something objectified. It is known to me. It's objectified. That alone is enough to make it not me, you know? So what if I go into the sense organs and I realize that the conscious me, the conscious being that I am, really belongs to my sense organs? But then I realize that, no, not really, because the sense organs are objectified. They're objects to me. They're tools that I use, and I illumine them. I'm aware of them. They enjoy my being as long as they're there. I could be without my sense organs, unfortunately, you know, but the sense organs are not adding to my being, right? And they're also objectified. I can do the same thing with my mind. My mind is different from your mind. It's objectifiable. All of my thoughts I'm aware of. They're thoughts, they're forms, you know. So what is their forms? Forms by their nature are mitya. What is the adhishtana? What are they depending on for their being? So then you can look at all parts of yourself, my emotions, my feelings, my relationships. All of these experiences are something which are objectifiable and come into being and go out of being. But I'm still, as I objectify all of these things, and this is again to understand the mitya, as I objectify all of these experiences, there is something that's not being objectified. What is not being objectified is the substance, the being, which itself can't have a form. If it has a form, then it's objectifiable and it exists in time and space. What is real is not going to be objectifiable as a form. As soon as it's a form, it's mitya. It depends on something else for its being. So now okay, here I am. Who am I really as the person, the reality, the person that is here? It's like the clay saying, in the pot saying, who am I really? Who am I really? Because really the pot has no being at all apart from the clay. At all, zero, right? So what about when I ask, who am I really? Who am I really? You know, because who I really am is what has name and form totally depends on for its being. Right. And so just think about it. When we do this drikdrisha or we do meditation, what is happening? It's even when we do relaxation techniques, what we are doing is objectifying the form, objectifying the body, letting the body totally relax so it's not calling any attention to my mind. Right? So I'm freeing myself of the body's here, but I'm freeing myself of that experience just by relaxing it out of experience so that it's not calling attention to myself. I do the same thing with my mind. I'm aware of my mind. I'm aware of my thoughts. I welcome them. I give kindness to them and understanding to the mind. I let the mind relax like into space. It's like I'm welcoming it out of experience, you know, because it becomes so relaxed. It's not drawing any kind of attention to me. So in fact, everything that I've taken to myself to be when I'm doing meditation, I'm actually welcoming that, relaxing that, so that it's not calling any attention to itself. Why would I do that? Really, so I can just see who's left. And who's left, if it's a form that's left, then I have to welcome that form, you know, objectify that form, relax that form so that it's not calling attention to itself. And in the end, who is left is only me. It's only me. But what is this me? Is it a form? I say, no. This me, the one that is ultimately the substance of everything, is not a form. I'm not a form. If it's a form, I can have a subject-object relationship with it. I simply am my being. I am self-evident, conscious being that is not black or white or red. I am not short or tall. I am not fat or thin. I am not a man or a woman. I simply am the constant being which is ever-present in every experience that I have. There is no experience that I can have that is away from me. I'm not a knower. For a knower, I need the mind and the sense organs. But I am the conscious being, the knownness, the self-evident knownness, which all experience enjoys. What I mean by that is, so just staying with your body, you can say, okay, this body is known, right? Body is known. It's known really because with the help of the sense organs and the mind, but nevertheless, it is known. Right? Then I can say, okay, so this body is known. I can say, are your sense organs known? And you say, yes, you can focus on any sense organ, whether it works or not, whether it's functioning. Yeah, my sense organs are known. Right now, you can just notice, are they known or not? What if you said they're not known? Then it'd be, uh-oh. Something's missing. Okay, so they're known. They're known. Okay. So then you say, well, what about your thoughts? Are your thoughts known? Oh, yes, they're known. Any thought that comes, it is known. What about your emotions? Are your emotions known? Yes, yeah, they're known. Are your memories known when they're there? Yes, absolutely, they're known. Yeah. Is the I thought known? Yes, it is known. Is there any experience that you can have, like your ignorance? Is your ignorance known? Well, my ignorance is known in the sense that if somebody asks me if I know that and I don't, I could say, no, I don't know that. So my ignorance is known. Is your knowledge is known? Yes, my knowledge is known because somebody says, do you know about that? Yes, I know. Do you know how to speak Chinese? Oh, no, actually I don't. Do you know how to speak Sanskrit? Oh, yes, kind of, yeah, yeah. So you know what you know and what you don't know. That's also known. There is no, is space known? I can say space known. Yes, space is known. You know, I'm aware of space. Space is known. Is time known? Yeah, time is known. You know, are the people in your experiences known? Yeah. Oh, yeah. They're known. Do they exist? Oh, yes. Everyone is. All the experiences are pervaded by being. They all are. They all have being. and they all are known. Like that, my body is known, my sense organs are known, my thoughts are known, my emotions are known. And then what is left? You would say, are you known? You say, what? I'm here. I am. I exist. I am a conscious being. You may not have self-knowledge. You may think that that your amness and your beingness, your consciousness, is dependent on the body, or when the body dies, maybe I die. But that's not what I'm asking right now. I'm saying, are you known? And they would say, yes. It's not like everything is known, and I don't. And then if there's some person here, I'm not aware of it. Yeah. So the knownness, so think of it like this. Everything is known. It is known, 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 it is known. I am known. So now what if I were to just hypothetically, all of these things that are objectified as known, it is known. I would say like this, it is, that's the sut. Every experience that you have, everything in it, internal or external, it is. It is, it is, it is, it is, it is, it is. No exception. Even if you're thinking of non-existence, non-existence is. Right? Because that experience is. Because you are trying to have an experience of non-existence, so you're bringing your concept of non-existence into the mind. That is, and it is known. So there is no escape from the isness and is knownness. And even it goes all the way to your being. This is known, this is known, this is known, this is known, this body is known, these sense organs are known, my mind is known, my thoughts are known, my emotions are known, the I thought is known, my ignorance is known, my knowledge is known, space is known, I am known. There is no place, there is no possibility of escaping isness and knownness. There is no corner where isness and knownness, the isness, the is-knownness, conscious being is not. It's absolutely impossible to find a corner that is devoid of that. Right? And so this becomes clear. It's hard for me to do that in reference to the couch, the rug, or somebody else. But I am complete here, you know, because both subject and object are contained in this body, mind, sense organs, subject and object. So that means I can use this teaching methodology to keep objectifying in this body, mind, sense organs everything that can be objectified, everything that has form. And then I am left with the self of the ultimate self of the subject. The subject, the ultimate subject, called Pratyagatma, that innermost self, cannot be objectified. If it can be objectified, then I have to go, you know. It means I've taken off the form, and then I have to go to the non-objectifiable being of that. And so, what is that non-objectifiable being going to be in terms of this body, mind, sense organs? It literally has to be me. Because anything objectifiable is not going to be me, right? Subject, object, it becomes the object. So now you think, probably, until you know, you think that somehow what makes you, you, me, this me experience, has something to do with the form. Like what makes me, you know, uniquely me, is my body, mind, sense organs. Why? Well, because I'm unique and I'm different from you. Right? So what makes me and gives, I have my own unique me experience. We'd say, you have your own unique body, different from everybody else's body. You have your own unique set of experiences and perceptions and moods and emotions, different from everybody else. But these things, for all of us, are objectifiable. They're all forms. They're all differentiated as forms within time and space. But what about me? How can I, this me, be objectifiable. The me now, I'm not talking about something abstract. I'm talking about when you think of yourself, this me, the one who is this body, the one who is the mind, the one who is this body-mind conglomerate, this indwelling me that makes me, that I recognize as me. All I'm saying is that the me that is truly you, as the very substance, the Adhishtana of all of these names and forms, is itself, this personal me that is you, is itself non-objectifiable. If it's objectifiable, it's a form, and I've got to take that form off. I am not a form. Even my own me experience, unless you're identifying it with your body, your mind, your sense organs, what form is it going to be? How can it be a form? And do you experience yourself really as a form? I don't think so. When we do meditation and you just turn yourself, you turn your mind to your own being, it's just, I am there. And if you ask yourself, what size are you? How big are you? What do you look like? These questions are totally irrelevant to my own meanness. But you see, once I recognize, if I'm not objectifiable, many things come out of that. And that one thing is that I'm not subject to change. If I'm not objectifiable, I'm not part of this Maya display. I'm not part of that. It's Adhishtana. I'm not an object within Maya. I'm the Adhishtana. I'm the conscious being, the knownness which the whole Maya enjoys. And just in this moment, this is all Maya, right? This body, mind, sense organs, everything you see is Maya. It is. The isness is the Adhishtana. That's the set. Being itself is the Adhishtana. Understand? The Adhishtana, what is actually there, the rope of the snake. Being, it is. There's no exceptions. Externally, internally, it is. What is your experience of isness or being? It's amness. It's language. My amness and isness are one and the same thing. In language we have, in English, I am, you are, it is. But these are just dividing up the experience of being in reference to different types of objects. First person, second person, third person, am, is, are, like that, you know. But we have no experience of isness. When I say, it is, when I say we have no experience of isness, what I'm really saying is, it am. The experience I have, I call amness. So either you say, Pujya Swamiji jokes like this, this am. Or let's say, this is. You know? We're talking about only the same thing. There's no, you can't objectify, you can't make into any type of name and form being. You are that being. And your own being is labeled as I am. Right? So now you have to say, go into this amness, or my own being. We can use words like this, my own amness, my being. And just fall into that being. And you ask, what shape is it? It has no form. It has nothing to do with shape. I'm not objectifiable like that. And now you have to realize one other thing about my own being. It is self-evident. That's why we say it is also chit, consciousness. And we understand that. What I mean by that is, say my being was not consciousness. Say being was not consciousness, that the amness was not consciousness. How would it be known? How would it be known? Who's going to know it? Right? So now look at, in terms of the world, you have to put the two together. It is known. isness is self-evident. Amness is self-evident. That's why we say Brahman, the Atma, yourself, is Sat, is being, which is Chit, which is consciousness. It's not that consciousness has some being or being has some consciousness. It's that conscious being is the very Adhishtana, the very truth, you know, of everything. And it is non-objectifiable. If it's objectifiable, it has to be a form differentiated from other forms. Even space is differentiated from the other four elements. That makes it a form, because you can differentiate it within time and space. But I can't make myself into an object. Now, when that's the case, this huge display that we call Maya, this huge, beautiful display, this picture, you know, this variegated picture, which itself, as it comes into being, brings with it time and space, which is brought about by Maya, this picture rests in me. I am its Adhishtana. The whole picture, not part of it, not part of the picture, because I can't be divided into parts. I'm not an object in time and space to have a right side and a left side and up and a down. I'm not divisible because I'm not within time and space. Like, let me give you an example. If you have an imagination, right? That imagination, within the imagination, you can do all sorts of things. You can cut it up into pieces, divide everything up, and make it into, do all kinds of things with it. You know, since it's your imagination, you can do basically what you want within the imagination. But that imagination doesn't touch you. You are its Adhishtana, right? You are not an object within the imagination. The imagination can't turn around and, let's attack the Adhishtana, you know? It's not possible. It can't do anything. Even if you want it to, you say, go ahead, you know? I give you the Shakti. I give you the power to do that. So it tries, you know? But it's confined within the reality, the mityatva, the reality, the maya of the imagination. It can't escape it. The creation is like that too. It can attack anything within the creation, change it, kill it, bring it to death, create this, create that. But it can't do anything to me because I'm its Adhishtana. It's like the snake trying to attack the rope. It simply can't. It's a different order of reality. It is 100% dependent for its reality on the rope. It has no being of its own to do anything to the rope. And the entire infinite creation has no being. It has no capacity to do anything to its Adhishtana. And I am the Adhishtana. There's one, can only be one Adhishtana, because I'm not an object in space. There's no time. There's no space for me to be partially over here and partially over there. I simply am. Right? And so nothing can be done. Swamiji will joke, Puja Swamiji, joke and say, even Ishwara can't do anything to you. Because Ishwara, the whole Maya Upadi, the whole Maya, enjoys the same Adhishtana. Ishwara is Mithya. Brahman is Satyam. Brahman is the reality. Ishwara is Mithya. That doesn't denigrate Ishwara. It just means that the nature of this whole infinite display of infinite intelligence has an Adhishtana, which is the Satchit, the conscious being, which is itself. So this Ishwara, this infinite display, enjoys knownness, conscious being. So Ishwara is known, right? So that's why we say Ishwara is a conscious being. Right? It enjoys knownness, the knownness which is consciousness. Just like all of, from as a jiva, all of my experiences from the very core of me to the very creation is known. You can't get away from it. That is known is my amness. I am, I exist, I am a conscious being. And that is invariable. So now the task in this teaching, pramana, this means of knowledge, is to help you to differentiate this mitya, the maya, from its own being. That means that I have to start with myself, because being is not an object. So there's the object and there's its being. No, because being, conscious being, is not something I can look at. It's only something I can be, because it doesn't have form. So I am that, right? And so in terms of this body-mind-sense organs, I have to see, okay, in the totality of my experience, all my perceptions, all of my thoughts, all of my feelings, everything objectifiable, it's all coming and going. It all exists within time and space, right? The body does, my feelings do, my thoughts do, my unconscious does, everything does. So now I have to recognize, okay, what is amidst all of this, these experiences that make up me in terms of this body, mind, sense organs complex, what is the invariable? Invariable means the one that never changes. Because I never change. Something that's not objectifiable is not subject to time. And so in this experience, I'm the only one that can be not objectifiable. There's no other choice, because your body obviously is, your thoughts, everything, and Namarupa all coming and going. So now I have to differentiate all of these coming and goings, you know, from their adhishtana, from me. That means I have to discover in this body, mind, sense organs, that which is its adhishtana, the me, that I can never come and go, can never change, that I can never get rid of, that I can never make do anything. I can never say, why don't you be like this? It doesn't even hear you. I simply am. I'm not even a knower. My own conscious being, knownness, is what the mind, is the adhishtana of the mind. So that the mind, because we'll see in the sattva, rajas, and tamas, but for those who know for now, the mind which is sattva as though reflects that conscious being, and so gives the appearance of there being a knower, an appearance of there being a knower. But when we analyze our experience, even every thought that you have, there's no knower there. It's only known. Find the knower. All experience, it is known, it is known, it is known. So sense, every thought in your mind is known because of your own knownness, your own self-evident consciousness. This thought is known because it's mitya. It has no being apart from the is-knownness of conscious being. And so the thought enjoys it being known. It is known. But now my ahankara, my I notion, is not going to come along and say, you know, I'm the table that I'm looking at, or I'm the room. It won't say that. It'll say, I'm the conscious being who's aware of the room, identifying the conscious aspect of the mind with me, and then identifying the objects in the mind with it, with the known. But what is in this in meditation where you see everything shines after me. So everything shines after me in what form, language-wise? It is known, it is known, it is known, it is known, I am known. Right? And so from Ishwara's standpoint, same thing. Everything shines, the whole Maya Upadhi was not limited by a limited Upadhi. The whole Maya projection, the manifestation of knowledge, shines after me. So Ishwara, from the standpoint of that Upadhi, from the standpoint of his form, the whole is known. The whole Maya Upadhi is known. That means it has a self. You know, that means the whole creation is a conscious being. In fact, the whole creation is a conscious being and every part in it. Every animal, every insect, every plant, the rocks, nature, there is nothing. There is nothing that doesn't have conscious being for its adhishtana. Right? That doesn't make it from its own standpoint a knower. Because for instance, the rock doesn't have a subtle body. The person does. And so from its own standpoint, there's differences in terms of whether it acts or functions as a knower or not. But everything in the creation has the same conscious being for itself, because there is no possibility of what is Maya or Mithya being independent of conscious being. It's kind of like there's no possibility for the snake to extend itself a little beyond the rope. The rope is so small, I think I'll stretch out a little bit. It's not possible. And so the whole vision, my whole self-understanding, is not just a matter of recognizing myself as conscious being, as we do more and more in meditation, just get to know myself as the conscious being that I am. I also then have to recognize, what is my relationship to this universe and to this body, mind, sense organs, for the Upanishads to say that the truth is just one non-dual self. How could that be? That can only be if I understand mithya, if I only understand maya as mithya. And so now, you've got 3 minutes, good. So let's just look at this for a minute. These verses fortunately build on each other, because I could spend the whole 10 days on this. See, that's how these verses are, each one is so full, but the next verse will build on it. So let's just remind ourselves of this verse. It says that this whole creation, right, idam jagat, this whole world, comes again and again from a state of nirvikalpa, not where it comes into unmanifest condition. It's the maya, comes into its unmanifest condition and then goes into manifestation from beginningless time. Okay? It says it looks at this creation as though a beautiful variegated picture, right? The maya projects. It's a beautiful variegated picture that, as it comes into manifestation, brings with it time and space. And this whole display of this universe is something that is brought about by this maya, what we call maya. Maya, yama iti maya, is mithya. For maya to be at all, it must have an adhishtana. So of this maya that comes into manifestation, who is its adhishtana? The adhishtana, we're talking about the adhishtana of the whole creation. Like the adhishtana of the snake is only the rope, not the chair. But the adhishtana, of the entire creation has to be one non-dual being that is the being, the truth of absolutely everything in the creation. Of the rope, of the chair, of the space, of all of the elements, of all of the jivas, of all of the inert things, of everything, of all of the animals, of every single thing in the creation, this whole display, this infinite display of knowledge, being maya, needs to have an adhishtana, and that adhishtana has to be true in the self of everything in it. And what can that adhishtana be? It can't be anything that has name and form, then it's maya. It can only be, and we recognize it to be, the satchit, the conscious being, which everything enjoys. Everything, without exception, it is, and it is known. When it is there, it comes into is knownness and goes out of it is knownness. The is knownness conscious being is what is stable, what is changeless, what is not an object within time. Every experience that you have comes into you as the satchit, as Brahman, and goes out, in and out. But you don't go in and out. You are stable. So in this knowledge, we have to recognize in ourselves, what about me is not objectifiable because I'm ultimately the subject and is stable. I can't get rid of me. I can't make me better. I can't make me worse. I simply can't get rid of me. See what I mean? That's the inner inquiry that we have to continue to do. So he says, Mayavi, this creation comes, it has for its being Brahman, conscious being, which with this maya becomes like a mayavi. That's Ishwara. With the maya, then we have Ishwara. Ishwara becomes like a mayavi, a magician, or like a mahayogi. from whom this creation comes into manifestation and resolves. Just like I gave you an example for yourself, your own Maya, you become the Ishwara, like of your imagination. You're the Ishwara of that imagination. You're the Ishwara of a lucid dream, right? Because it comes from you, just like that. It comes from you, is sustained by you, it resolves into you. Or you yourself are not becoming at all. You've already become. You are changeless. You're not objectifiable. You're not existing within Maya. You're the Adhishtana of Maya. And that's what we have to discover simply by being lucky enough to have a human body and a buddhi, you know, and a teaching methodology that can make me see this without any doubt. Because once that you understand, there's nothing you can do about it. You have to understand it and see it, and there's no way to negate it. But it's good to try to negate it. I'm not telling you not to try to negate it. It's a good thing. That's where you're really wrestling with the material. You should do that. But there's something here, you know, really to be seen. So Bhagavan Shankara says, you know, my namaskars to the one, you know, to Lord Dakshinamurti, whose self is this one, right? Whose self is this one from the whole creation. So my salutations to the Lord, to Shiva, who's taken the form of Dakshinamurti to teach me this, to make me know this, the one who is the very self of this whole creation. So now in the form of my guru. That's it.
Shishyate Om Shanti 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 Harihi Om Shri Guru Pyo Namaha Harihi Om